The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
It seems about the time we began hearing about the drug cults, people trying to get their minds bent out of shape artificially with chemicals, we began to see a tremendous rise in interest in occultism and the black arts, in voodoo and witchcraft, Satanism and demonism. All kinds of cults, religious and parapsychological and otherwise, have sprung up in investigative methods and attempts to find out, really, is there anything to this? Are there really spirits? Is there a spirit world? And if so, are some of them evil spirits as opposed to good spirits? In the past couple of programs, we've talked about ESP, extrasensory perception, and about UFOs, unidentified flying objects, and whether there is life in outer space. Well, believe it or not, there is life all around you. Inside of you, your body is host to perhaps millions of forms of life, at least several forms and millions of them. We're not aware of that. We don't see it. We don't think about it very much. But there also is a spirit world of which you ought to be very aware. No kidding, there's life in you as well as all around you and even upon you. When I was a boy in school, I remember reading a book, well, the teacher read it to us and talked about it, called Jimmy the Microbe, and it was a kind of an attempt, like one movie I heard about but didn't see, to tell young people about these little bacilli that infest our bodies, that take trips down our bloodstreams, and crawl around inside of us. And it told about the little germs, and they were kind of riding around on a red corpuscle disc, I guess, sailing merrily along, having these discussions inside the bloodstream of this fellow. It told about how they're walking along on the esophagus, clinging to these huge stiff bristles, and they heard this rumbling. It sounded like a giant tornado behind them. And sure enough, the larynx was spasmodically contracting in this host, and this fellow was trying to cough because presumably these little germs were crawling around, falling off the little sensitive hairs that are in the esophagus, and they were tickling this fellow, and he was trying to cough them out, so he blasted them out of his mouth. Anyway, it was quite a hair-raising trip to follow along in the bloodstream of this human being and crawling around inside of his ears and his nose and one thing and the other. And it did teach little kids in about the fifth grade about germs. So we began to learn about various types of bacilli. We're basically unaware of the life that lives in us or upon us, but it's there nevertheless. Our bodies are hosts to all kinds of helpful and harmful bacteria. If we didn't have them, we couldn't digest our food. And as a matter of fact, if they weren't in the soil, you wouldn't have the breakdown of that which dies and goes back to become humus in the soil, and we wouldn't have what we call organic farming. We wouldn't have really fertile soil in the first place. But we're very unaware, really, of the yeast spores, the little forms of life that drift around through the air. And this is why I think there's a great deal of lack of knowledge, frankly, about where some disease epidemics and some of the flus and so on come from. Just what they have to do with the total climatic pattern of the earth, with high or low pressure areas, with changing of the weather, whether or not billions upon billions of germs can explosively grow and be transported in these fashions rather than just from person to person or mouth to mouth or hand to hand. I don't think science even knows for sure. But you can't see them, but the point is that the life is there. Now, under a very powerful microscope, you can detect that kind of life, but there are kinds of life you can't detect, even under a powerful microscope. We are aware of power, of light, of heat, of radiation, of energy, the ability to do work and overcome inertia. But we're not really aware of spiritual power. Now, there is a quotation from C.S. Lewis I'd like to read to you because to me it was quite important. The quote from his book was, "There are two equal and opposite errors to which our race can, or into which our race can fall about the devil." He was talking about Satan and the devil. And he said, "One is disbelief in the existence of such things, disbelief in the devil or in demons. And two is belief in, and then feeling an excessively unhealthy interest in them. They themselves," he said, "are equally pleased by both errors and hail the materialist or the magician with the same delight." I think that's a very good point, and I'm going to use that as a kind of a guide in the way I approach the subject. I feel an unhealthy interest in the spirit world, in talking about it excessively, reading about it, studying about it, getting it on your mind is dangerous. I honestly do feel that way. On the other hand, I feel it is just about equally as dangerous to be ignorant of the fact that it does exist, to be unaware and ignorant of what kinds of spirits there are and whether they are indeed there and what they might be able to do. The Bible is a book that talks about a spirit world. It talks about a God. It talks about the family of God. It talks about creation. It talks about angelic beings, and not only the proverbial angels standing around with white robes and wings, but very strange-looking creatures of all kinds that are mentioned in the Bible. And in the next couple or three programs, I want to simply chat with you about that, because as you look at ESP and UFOs and clairvoyance and seances and magic and the occult explosion, it's about time you were really informed and knew where to go as a source material to get the information you need about how to understand what is going on and how to protect yourself from it. Well, it begins clear back in Genesis 1 and verse 1. In the beginning, God created, the Bible says. In the beginning, He created the heavens and the earth. Now, you can look into Bible reference books and you can find that there is a great big straw argument going on between evolutionists and creationists. And there doesn't need to be any such argument. There are so many people who think that if you believe the Bible, you can't believe geology. You can't believe biology or astronomy or archaeology or any of the physical sciences, the practical, material, and provable sciences. And this is simply not true. The Bible is not in conflict whatsoever with any claims of evolution, of aeons upon aeons of time. The Bible does not contradict the idea that there may have been ages after ages where the world was, in a sense, host to various forms of life that we do not know today. The rocks show this to us. It absolutely is proved by the subject of archaeology, and certainly of geology, and historical geology. I want to read to you just a few segments of one of the most noted biblical commentaries, Critical and Experimental, by Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, in their section on the first chapter of the book of Genesis. They say, on reviewing the brief sketch given here, the history of the pre-Adamite earth and the progressive development of organic life, it appears that a long series of ages elapsed ere the earth, they always use that kind of language, before the earth was brought into a state adapted to be the residence of its present occupants. The procedure of God in the fitting up of this earth, as in all other departments of His works, was progressive, they say. And as, after the raw material was created in the beginning, He chose, in His sovereign wisdom, to act upon it through the operation of those natural laws which He had imposed upon matter. It was only in the course of a slowly revolving duration and by frequent succession of great physical changes, external and internal, that this terrestrial ball was prepared for habitation and productivity. I'm saying that I believe these people are right. Now, this is probably the fourth alternative. They give many alternatives in here about what might have occurred back during the time of creation, Genesis creation, as it were. But there were distinct pre-Adamic creations in the sense of life forms that were on this earth. And it did not happen that these life forms gradually and successively began to slowly disappear and to evolve, but rather you see one sudden destruction and calamitous, a geologic upheaval of some sort, after another. Here's another quotation from this book. We have seen from the teachings of geology that not only is the earth of vast antiquity, but that God has been carrying on the plans of His all-wise and benevolent providence through a countless series of ages and making it the scene on which stupendous revolutions have taken place, and myriads of creatures, diverse in form, character, and power, have in long succession flourished. We have found that destruction followed destruction and creation followed creation. In just a moment, I'm going to tell you who caused that very first great destruction.
For thousands of years, scientists have wondered and speculated about the origin of the universe. Theories have risen and fallen in a powerful flood of scientific evidence. But the question is still unanswered. How was the universe created? The Ambassador College free booklet, Our Awesome Universe, shows you first the brilliant regalia of our universe, and then brings you up to date on the greatest pronouncements of science and how science says the universe was created. But more than that, this booklet goes beyond science, beyond technology, and boldly confronts you with the only answer that fits all the facts. This attractive brochure captures dozens of breathtaking star formations that remain invisible to the naked eye. You'll find it extremely informative. Now you don't have to wonder and speculate about the origin of the solar system. Be sure to request your free copy of Our Awesome Universe. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
When you look out into the universe, when you look at the Milky Way and stars at night, you are looking at what was once a great destruction. You are looking, believe it or not, at the evidence of a tremendous, huge, stellar or interstellar or spatial battle of some sort long, long ago. When you get that brochure on Our Awesome Universe that we can send to you, and it's not very, very thick, you can read it in a very short period of time. It has some very beautiful color illustrations in it. We'd be happy to send it to you by return mail as quickly as we get your request for it, and is absolutely free of charge. You will find a great deal more information about a once great perfection that was totally destroyed. Now, believe it or not, the Bible does not require that everything that you read in the first chapter of the book of Genesis about the creation of let there be light and let the dry land appear and let the creatures that are upon it, all of this happened in just one moment of time. Now, that creation that you see in the creation chapter did happen in one literal week. But prior to that time, as I've already showed, the Bible commentaries tell you there is an indeterminate period of time where there may have been successive stages where life forms existed on this earth. Not human life, I'm talking about pre-Adamic life. There was life on the earth long before Adam. Does the science of geology claim they want 4.5 billions for the lifespan of the earth? Fine, let's let them have 4.5 billions, no problem. The Bible allows for that. There's no reason to argue about time, because there's a completely indeterminate period of time between an earlier perfect creation and a later great destruction. When you look at the moon coming closer to our own solar system, you can get just a pair of binoculars and stand out in your own backyard and take a look at great destruction. You are seeing huge craters that asteroids of some sort impacted to create years and years ago, millions, billions, who knows, perhaps billions. And now with the lunar landings, they begin to realize that the moon, basically, and the Earth are about the same age. They're not quite sure about the origin or exactly how it came to be captured by the Earth and why it is out there. We know what it does. We know it is absolutely essential to human inhabitation of the Earth, and our moon causes the tides and affects very dramatically our weather patterns and the like, but they don't know how. They know what it does, but how it got there, and approximately when, that's still pretty much a mystery. But you are looking at a great destruction. Craters up to 100 miles across, and other craters inside of them on that crater floor, and craters in the rim of other craters that shows that the one came after the former, and so on. So you are looking, even there, at our closest spatial neighbor, at destruction, once. It is not now going on, though, is it? When you look up tonight, you're not going to see new craters. Now, maybe little tiny ones are being formed because every single day, our Earth and its gravity, as well as the Moon and its gravity, are attracting space debris. There is what people have called stardust out there, space debris. Millions upon millions of little astral bodies are bombarding the envelope, the protective envelope of air around our Earth every day and every night and every minute. Most all of them always burn up and become just so much dust. And if it were not for that envelope of dust, both from outer space and of course from the Earth and its winds itself, we would not have the reflection, the refraction, and the diffusion of light rays from the sun. And we wouldn't have the ability to see the way we do even in shadow. There are natural laws at work. Now, let's come to the Earth for a minute. When you look at the Earth itself with the vast mountain chains that, in a sense, you could say begin up in the Aleutians and come all the way down through the Canadian Rockies and through the backbone of the United States and the Rockies, down through Central America with its range of volcanoes called a Ring of Fire around the Earth, down through the Andes and to the tip of Tierra del Fuego, you go completely around the world by following that mountain chain. Picking it up in the Aleutians, you come across into Russia and across into the Himalayas, and then up into the Pamir Notch, and the Kurdistan Mountains, the Hindu Kush Mountains, and across into Europe, across the Bosporus Dardanelles to the Carpathians, and from there clear down into the backbone of Europe and the Alps. These giant mountain ranges were built at one time in our past, a fairly recent past from the standpoint of history, yet no mountain building is going on today. But when you look at the Rocky Mountains, when you go to the Alps in Europe or other mountain chains such as the Atlas Mountains in northern part of Africa, you will see tortured and twisted shapes. You will see in the Alps of Europe, for example, and many places in the United States similarly, what formerly was sedimentary rock. Now, sedimentary rock is laid down just like the pages of this book. It's flat, just like you make a bed. When you go in and make and see that your wife made the bed, you can probably guarantee that your wife put the sheet on the bed before she put that cover on it and before she put the decorative pillows on top of that. You can just about guarantee that what your eye tells you is true, that she put the sheet on first and then over the cover over that and then the final decorative cover over the top of that one and so on. Well, about all, nearly all, the vast majority rather, of the world's strata are sedimentary. That means water carried or waterborne. Now when you look at these folds, isoclines, synclines, geosynclines marching endlessly across the earth, you look at the Appalachians when you're flying over them in an airplane next time, you see these tremendous synclines there, like a series of geosynclines, a folding action where the earth had just been shoved together. And then you see in a cutaway section, such as you can see visible from faulting, or perhaps where it's carved away so you can see it between Bakersfield and Los Angeles by earthquake faulting, and you can see up thrust. You can see strata tilted on end, or completely upside down, or folded, just like you can see the swirling shapes of maybe a housewife mixing chocolate with something else for a cake mix of some kind, like a cinnamon roll, and yet it's solid rock. Once it was sedimentary, once it was waterborne and water deposited by huge tides of some kind, then it hardened, and under the weight of billions and billions of tons of rock that was superposed and laid down atop it, finally by the dynamic pressures of the crust of the earth. Now if I were to do this to my notes here, I could tell you you've got two distinct ages, but you've got four layers there, and you can tell just by a simple little example like that, that you are looking at some dynamic, convulsive, revolutionary type of a destruction that affected the entirety of the surface of this earth. So when you look at the mountains of the earth and the great vast dry lakes of our western desert, of which there are thousands, with old shorelines plainly visible and with fossil marine life plainly visible, you can see that most of all of our western United States of America and Canada was once underwater. Many people do not know, for example, that the Great Salt Lake is a tiny saline puddle at the very final bottom of what once used to be a vast inland sea. Very few people seem to know, for example, that the Mississippi River is a tiny little part of the bed of what once was about 100 miles wide. And that when this continent was raised beneath the surface of a great primordial sea, it began to drain, and there were vast inland basins that still contained water for perhaps hundreds of years. And the tides were not suspended during that time. And the sorting action of water, as the tidal action acted upon huge inland seas, certainly had a great deal to do with some of the geological phenomena that you see right before you today. So I'm saying when you look at the universe, you see great destruction. You look at the moon, you see former ancient destruction. You look at the surface of our earth, at the mountains, the river deltas, the valleys, the continents themselves, the shape and the form of the earth, and a study of geology is showing you former destruction. There was once a titanic battle between spiritual forces which caused a great destruction of this earth. You are ushered upon the scene in Genesis, the first chapter, where the eternal Creator God begins to make order out of chaos.
For centuries, the occult arts have been kept hidden behind closed doors. But now, in today's society, many have turned to the methods and secrets of the ancients. Decisions are made according to the chance fall of a card, the pungent odor of incense, or the shifting position of the planets. Probably people you know dabble in the occult. Maybe you wonder whether there truly is help and guidance in a crystal ball, that the future can actually be known from tea leaves or from the lines in the palms of your hands. The booklet, The Occult Explosion, What Does It Mean?, explains what's really behind these auguries and divinations and examines why so many in these enlightened times have turned to mysticism for answers. Write today for your free copy of the booklet, The Occult Explosion, What Does It Mean? Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.
You know, even though Genesis 1 is the first chapter in the Bible, there are several other chapters in the Bible, back in Ezekiel and Isaiah, and even back in the book of Revelation, that predate or antedate the first chapter of Genesis. It begins with a spiritual creation. The Bible talks about the creation of spirit beings, not just members of the family of God, but angelic beings. And the Bible distinctly talks about archangels. It talks about seraphim and cherubim. And when you really look into the Bible or what it says, as opposed to church history or tradition or mythology or history, you get a kind of a shock. Because when I say the word cherub, for example, what comes into your mind? Probably a cherubic, we say, little baby. A cute little naked baby streaking through the heavens with a bow and arrow. Because most people think that's what a cherub is. We think that a cherub, filled with cherubs, if you were going to do a painting and said, well, sprinkle a lot of cherubs in there, would you put a giant, let me ask you, would you put a giant ox with perhaps the body or the claws and the feet of a lion, let's say, and would you put the head or the face of a man on it and then make sure it had big eagle's wings on its body? I doubt it very much. But if you had ever seen a cherub, that's what you would do. You would, absolutely you would, because you see in the Bible it says that a cherub looks like those four creatures. It looks like a man, a lion, an eagle, and an ox. Now let me just throw something at you, lay it on you here for just a minute. You stop to, if you want to take the Bible literally, which I do, frankly, and you look at Genesis, the first chapter, the spiritual creation, then you look at Adam and Eve in the garden, then you look at this expulsion from the garden, and the fact that God said he was going to put cherubs to guard the way to the garden that would turn a fiery sword this way and that, and that they could never enter into the garden. They went out eastward and dwelt in a different kind of a land, and they were there for what period of time? Well, did you know that Adam lived approximately 1/6 of all of the human experience until now? Did you know that his lifespan overlapped that of many of the people you read who died at the time of the flood, that Adam died just very shortly before the flood? Probably not, because very few people in the first place believe the Bible at all. In the second place, those who believe part of it don't believe the rest of it. In the third place, many who do believe portions of the New Testament reject the Old Testament altogether. In the fourth place, those who accept a lot of the Old Testament don't believe in the lifespan of the patriarchs prior to the flood, or don't believe in the flood of Noah itself, and don't believe in many of the miracles of the Bible, and so on. So there's a great deal of confusion. But if you want to just play with it and pretend for the moment as if the Bible was real, as if it really meant what it said, then what you've got is this. Cherubim with a flaming sword, as it were, guarding the way to the tree of life for almost 1/6 of human history until now. And the last moment that they would have been removed would have been at the flood. Because there is no report in the Bible of the destruction of the Garden of Eden prior to the flood of Noah. Now, this means that there was a certain amount of tradition that must have gotten started. Now, stop to think about mythology for the minute. Where do you hear about a giant someplace, or about the goose that laid the golden egg, or Jack and the Giant Killer, or St. George and the Dragon? What about these winding staircases up to the castle at the end of the thunderclad, the kind of a cloud-enveloped lightning flashing and so on? A castle up there, and inside is all the goodies. There's something very precious in there. Usually we think of it as gold or silver or jewels or maybe a goose that lays the golden egg. And what's lying out there at the door? Not a mastiff or somebody's mongrel or even a Pekingese. No, a dragon. What's that dragon look like? Well, nearly always just like a huge long serpentine form of some kind. And there's flame shooting out of its mouth, like a fiery flame of some kind. It's interesting that in the ancient passageways, hallways, or entryways of kings' palaces back in ancient Babylon, and all through the ancient Mideast city-states and empires, you found huge creatures standing there as if guarding the entranceways to the treasure houses and the king's palaces. You know what they look like? They look like the head of a man, the body of an ox, the claws and the feet of a lion, sometimes the body of a lion. They could be interchanged in all of these four constituents, and the wings of an eagle. It's strange, too, that in the Egyptian mythology, you find men's bodies with eagle's heads, or men's bodies with lion's heads. And the Bible shows that there was a literal spirit being called a cherubim. Ezekiel saw cherubs in the first chapter of Ezekiel and the 10th chapter of Ezekiel and described what he saw. Now, you know, the last program, we heard the telephone call from the fellow down there in Pascagoula, Mississippi. And he tried to describe to us, if he's going to write something on that, and I imagine somebody's going to write a book on it or an article on it, he's going to try to describe what this face looked like, what the feet were looking like, and how they kind of glided, and how he said he was taken inside this vehicle of some sort that seemed to hover over there, and how these creatures looked all wrinkled and this and that. Well, Ezekiel describes exactly what he saw. He talks about these creatures who looked like a man, a lion, an eagle, and an ox. And here's all this mythology among the ancient Aztecs, the Mayans, the Incas, Indians in the North American and the South American continent, others in other races of other parts of the world, mythology about all the goodies being guarded by some kind of a dragon-like creature, or like as not, a creature that looked like a lion, an eagle, a man, and an ox. It is guarding the way to something that is really great. Yet here for about one-sixth of all of human history, if you're just pretending for the moment that the Bible is really true, there were cherubim, and cherubim looked like men, or lions, or eagles, or oxen, guarding the way to the tree of life. Do you suppose that when Noah and all his kids and the family got aboard that boat, if they ever did, if you think they did or not, well, we're just pretending for the moment the Bible is real. Do you suppose they lost their memory during that year or so? Or didn't they tell their kids who told their kids, and doesn't sometimes a story get a little bit twisted in the telling as time goes on, about some of the things they had seen and some of the things they had remembered on the other side of the flood? Well, it's interesting. I'm just beginning to get started, though. I'm just barely scratching the surface, because that study by itself is very, very important. But there's another aspect to this I've got to break off and come back to tell you about next time. And that is the fact that there are archangels. There are three of them named in the Bible: Gabriel, Michael, and Lucifer. Something rather horrible happened to one of them. Jesus said, "I saw Satan as lightning fall from heaven." There was a battle in space, and the destruction of the universe and the creation of a lot of the surface of our earth as it once anciently was in a destructive way occurred as a result of that battle. That set the stage for Creation Week of Genesis, the first chapter. I'll take that up next time, so be sure to join me right here. And in the meantime, get your name on the mailing list of these brochures, the one on the occult explosion and the one on our awesome universe. It is a full-color, beautifully illustrated brochure about the origin of the universe, the size of it. Gives you the perspective of our life on this earth in our solar system, some distances in our own solar system, our place in the Milky Way, and a great deal of emphasis on the awesome power of the sun. Our awesome universe, free of charge. Also request the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.